Yes. All right. I think we're all ready. Cool. So, last week, we talked about one of the three pillars of wellness, what I call core wellness, right? We talked about how you think. And one of the biggest things to understand about how last week segues into this week is that, do you think that changing an eating habit or an eating belief is easy to do? We're kind of brought up with a certain way of how you're supposed to eat, right? Everybody has a different way of, and does everyone here eat the same way? No. Does that sometimes cause issues, you know, whenever you go out to eat? No. What are you doing that for? What are you doing this for? You know, we have preconceived wiring, and all these things get passed down to us from our teachers, our parents, our whoever it is. Usually it's the way we were brought up in our home, right? So what I'm asking you to do today is, even if you are used to eating a certain way and used to looking at nutrition a certain way, I'm asking you just to be open. That's all, okay? Just be open and absorb some new knowledge. And whenever you absorb new knowledge, you may want to take action on some of that new knowledge, and you may find out that you feel a whole heck of a lot better, that you think more clearly, that you like your body more, and you, all of these things may happen. And that, is that enough possibly to shift a belief? If you start seeing some results, usually results rule, right? I don't care what you're talking about, I want to see results, right? So that's what it's about this week, is we're going to try and not so much tell you what to eat exactly every meal and all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to give you a diet plan, right? I want to give you overriding principles and concepts that you can use whenever you're confronted with a decision. You can say, well, how does that fit into my new knowledge that I just gained? Okay, so that's my goal today, right? So when you go into this, you have to ask the question, does it really matter? I mean, go 20 years ago and ask any prestigious medical doctor, you know, anywhere, you would say, no, it doesn't matter. It's your genes. You know, nutrition doesn't matter. Yeah, you got to eat enough calories to keep you alive, but ultimately, it's just keeping calories, calories in, calories out. It doesn't really matter. Nutrition really doesn't matter. You're just wasting your money on those vitamins, right? That's what you hear a lot. But does it matter? Okay. Well, here, ask these mice, right? Those two mice. What's that? Batteries? I need batteries? Really? That's okay. I'm glad you caught it now. Sorry about that. Right, and I'll just restate questions. Okay. Good. On. But thank you for catching that, or else we would have been looked like this the whole time. Okay, does nutrition really matter? These mice, they have the exact same DNA. Exact same DNA. Same age, same everything. One of the mice, the big one, with the obese one, we'll say, right? And the yellow coat also has diabetes and cardiovascular disease, versus the one on the right. These are agouti mice. The one on the right has a normal brown coat like normal agouti mice should. What's the difference? How can they have the same DNA and look so dramatically different? Nutrition. And it's not what they ate. This is the kicker. Guess who who they fed to make the difference in these mice. It's not what these mice ate. It's what their mothers ate. Think about that one. Let that one sink in for a little while. And let that sink in if you're ever considering having children. It goes for men and women, right? It's real important what you feed your baby. Okay? This is such important information. And the exact nutrients that they tested here in these mice were B vitamins, methylation nutrients. Methylation is a process in the body that's dependent on one thing mainly, and it's folic acid. Anybody ever heard of, you know, if you're pregnant, you should take folic acid to prevent birth defects? Has anyone ever heard that before? Maybe not. I mean, probably haven't been in that scene yet, but usually that's the case. You know, everyone says you have to take folic acid or at least a multivitamin while you're pregnant to prevent what they call neural tube defects or birth defects. So they deprived this mouse on the left of methylation nutrients, mainly folic acid. So the genes didn't do what they were supposed to do. They didn't get to express themselves optimally and as they were designed. So do you think it's important? Okay, so we know it's important to feed what mom eats. So would you buy that it's important what you eat as well? To make your genes express their optimum potential without expressing disease? Real, real important. Okay, and by the way, where's folic acid come from mainly? It comes after the word, foliage on trees. Green. Folic acid comes predominantly from green food. Okay, so just let that one sink in a little bit. Now, so the only thing different, these mothers had different nutrition, and this is what we call epigenetics. Above the gene. If you just Google epigenetics, you're going to see a lot of stuff. And this is all we're talking about. It's about the food you eat, the thoughts you think, the exercise you get. Your environment determines what your genes do. So the environment trumps genes. It's real important to remember that. Environment, the nature versus nurture thing, right? The question, I'm telling you the answer right now. It's the environment, stupid. Right? And that I'm not calling you stupid, but it's a phrase you'll see in a little bit. So it's a pretty darn important. So what does an oil rig have to do with anything? It's a mnemonic. Is that right? Oil rig. Is that what you call those? Right? Mnemonic. Each letter represents. Is that right?
Yeah. It's a...
Okay, well, sorry, this is not an English or literature discussion, thank goodness. An apple. What does an apple do if you take a bite out of that apple and you let it sit on the ground? What's going to happen? It's going to rot. Anybody can buy that, right? This process of rotting, this is going to be the main thing I want you to get today, and the most important thing about nutrition. This process of the apple rotting is called oxidation, burning. It gets burned. It's rotting. Oxidation is rotting. And what oil rig stands for? Is anybody taking chemistry right now, like inorganic chemistry, or learning any kind of how to do equations and stoichiometry with chemistry? Oxidation involves loss of an electron. Okay, that's how I remembered it, and I still use the teach today. Oil rig. Oxidation involves loss. Electrons are the basis of all energy that we have, and what makes us up what we are. Electrons. Okay, that's what the sun gives to the plant. That's what the plant packages up for us to eat. Packages up electrons. Energy, negative electronegative potential. But whenever something rots, you lose those electrons. And that energy gets dissipated into space. Right? So you lose electrons and it rots. Reduction involves gain. I just put that in there. Reduction is the going the other way. Okay? But it's real hard for an apple to go the other way because it can only go one way. After it's pulled from its source of energy, it can only go one way, correct? Am I by that? So an apple can't be reduced back. You have to be connected to energy to be able to do that. You have to have your energy source. This is the reason. So is that apple older or younger whenever it's deteriorating? It gets older. That's how the apple basically, it ages, right? That's what happens to us if we are constantly exposed to oxidation. Constantly exposed to the body processes of making energy, it's going to break your body down. Luckily for us, we have the power to reduce it and bring it back by using antioxidants, which we'll talk about in a second. But this is back in 1954. Denham Harbin put out the free radical theory of aging. He said, aging occurs as cells are permanently damaged from continual attacks from chemical particles known as free radicals. Has anybody by this time heard about what a free radical is? Free radicals are what, they're like the fire that burns up the cells. Okay? And the thing is fire good? Can you use fire for good? It's real important to have your body oxidizing things because that's how your body makes energy. It's how your body makes detox. It's how it gets rid of toxic chemicals. It's how it does all kinds of wonderful things for our system. But whenever those hits are out of control, our cells are permanently damaged by these continual attacks. And that's what causes our cells' DNA to get torched, which sets up cancer. It's what causes our arteries to become crusty because inflammation of the arteries, inflammation of LDL cholesterol is what causes the plaque, and that's what closes down our arteries and causes heart attacks and strokes and peripheral artery disease and all that kind of stuff. We have all kinds of health issues that stem from excess inflammation. So we have to, the name of the game here is balance, right? We need to offset all of this oxidation with antioxidation. And to drive home this point a little further, let's think about how these teams of firefighters or firemen or fire people, or firefighters probably be the best way to explain them, they go into areas that need fire, like areas of forest that need fire for the health of the forest. They go in and do controlled burns. They go in and they give just the right amount of oxidation, just the right amount of fire to help new grasses come back alive, to help the conifers and the pine trees, to help them regenerate and help their seeds to actually be able to germinate. They need fire. So fire is very essential. So fire is huge in human physiology. Inflammation, in other words, is huge in human physiology. We can't heal without inflammation, right? So, but if it gets out of control, what happens? Wildfires burn out of control, consume whole towns, right? So it's so important to understand this balance. You need inflammation, but you got to have anti-inflammation. It's constantly, you're constantly burning up and you're constantly putting the fire out. So it's like keeping a fire in your fireplace with just enough, you know, you got to keep it, you can't build it so big that it gets out into your living room. You have to be able to get the smoke out of the house and all this kind of stuff. So that's the idea, and that's what we do with antioxidants. And where do antioxidants come from in your food? Predominantly color. So that's the basic rule here, is look at your plate, where's the color? How many different colors are on there, and what's the primary color that we want to look for? Anybody? I gave it away, didn't I, with the color, the green color. Yeah, green is what we're after. So you guys have all heard this before, eat your greens, eat your vegetables, fruits and vegetables. See, it's really not, you just need a reason why to do it, I guess. You know, if you have a big enough reason why, it'll give you the how. But you guys know what you should be doing, right? And here's the other thing. When you eat these foods that are colorful, fresh, preferably raw, your nutrient density goes up and so does longevity. Okay? That's what we're after. We want as little amount of calorie and as much nutrients as possible. Okay, let's play that game with French fries, right? How much calorie versus how much nutrient capacity?
okay? You're getting a ton of calories for very little nutrition. Versus a, I don't know, you guys tell me, what would you think would be something that would be nutrient-dense foodie? Anybody?
Broccoli.
There you go. Thank you. Broccoli. Apple. Orange. Whatever it is. It's got less calories, more nutrients. That's the simple equation. Nutrient density. Okay? Nutrient density, because the more nutrient dense things are, the more antioxidants you get for your body, the more you can offset the oxidation and be healthier and healthier and healthier. Here's some general rules. Number one, water's pretty darn important because water makes up like 70, depending on what you look at, 70 to 80% of our body is water. Okay? And if you're eating lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, there's a lot of water in that. You know, take an apple and get rid of all the water, and what do you have? Not very much. You know, an apple is like 80, 90% water. Okay? But that's a good thing, right? Because we can hydrate as we eat fruits and vegetables. But if we eat things that do not have water in them, then our body needs to drink more water. So, in general, we want to cover our bases here. And here's a general equation for you. Body weight divided by 2 equals ounces per day. That's something to shoot for. Okay? Body weight divided by 2 equals ounces per day. That's your water. And you can do this also with herbal tea and things like that. But when we start trying to get it with soft drinks and fruit juices and things like that, then that creates a problem. Soft drinks, because it kind of leaches nutrients out of you, doesn't fit that nutrient density rule. And fruit juices are really big, high sugar spikers, and we'll talk about why that's important in a second, why to avoid drinking lots and lots of fruit juices. So there you are, eat your colorful meals 4 to 6 times a day. There's no rule that says you have to eat one, you know, in the morning, at noon, and at night. That's a social norm imposed by your wiring, right? So you can eat whenever you want. Eat when you're hungry, not when you're supposed to eat. Make sense? You know, we're conditioned to eat. Ding, ding, ding. Okay, Pavlov's dog. You start when you're getting hungry, so it's time to eat. It's 8 o'clock, time for breakfast, 12 o'clock. Most people don't understand what real hunger truly is. Because they get hunger emotionally because blood sugar starts dropping or something, but they don't get the pull of real hunger. Okay, so eat when you're hungry, not by, you know, when you think you should be eating time of day. Now, what do we want to eat this? What do we want to have in these colorful meals? Predominantly, right? Fresh, living, raw plant-based foods. That should make up the bulk of what you. You know, that's your nutrient density, right? That's your minimum amount of calories, most amount of nutrients. That should make up the bulk of it. And dark green leafy vegetables, soaked and sprouted nuts and seeds. Those guys are really helpful sometimes. And you can see, I draw them long. These are ways to get your protein if you don't choose to eat animal products. Okay? Now, I'm not here today to espouse a vegan diet or a vegetarian diet. Everybody has, y'all are big and smart people. I'm going to give you some facts and you can make your decisions from there. Right? But this has turned into what my meat is. Dense sprouts. Mung bean sprouts. You take a steak and you take mung bean sprouts. Same amount of weight. You've got 4 ounces of mung bean sprouts and 4 ounces of a steak. Did you know it's the exact same protein content? Okay. You get your protein from dark green leafy vegetables and sprouts, predominantly. That's what you want to go for. Also, sometimes meal replacements can be helpful. They do have powdered meal replacements that you can get and use. If you're just not eating at all and you need to be eating, and you know you should be eating, sometimes those shakes can help. When you're going out the door, okay. So there's all kinds of different ones. I'm not going to tell you one or over another, but they can be helpful. If you choose to eat animal products, here's the magic word: do so consciously. Does anyone have an idea what that might mean in terms of animal products? Yes.
Know where they came from.
Know where they came from. How they're treated.
What they ate before you ate them.
What they ate. That's thinking consciously. Right? Know your food. Now, I'm gonna we'll go back into that a second. I'll get back into conscious a little bit later on. But when you do this and you eat only grass-fed, right? Because remember, you know, they're animals too. They need to be eating green food. They're not designed to eat grain, just like we're not designed to eat grain in massive quantities like we do. But that's what kind of was at the base of our food pyramid for like 10 years was breads and cereals, right? Okay, that's one of the worst things you can do, because if anybody knows about how to raise a cow and how to fatten up a cow quick, what do they feed a cow to fatten it up quick? Corn. Feed them grain that makes them get really big really fast. So how do you fatten a human population? Feed them corn. Feed them wheat. Feed them lots and lots of rice, and just feed them grain. Yes. Yes, cows that eat corn, it messes up the pH of their stomachs. Okay? It's not designed to be that. When it messes up the pH of their stomachs, then bacteria gets through that's not supposed to get through, and it ends up in the meat. That's exactly right.
So, yeah, they're hurting the cows, and it's not just animals getting hurt. Where the process is, we're eating those
damaged cows. That's right. So that brings us to the whole concept of the CAFOs, or the confined animal factory operations, I think. CAFOs, right? Yes.
And also the stress toxins, that's not what you said, is it?
No.
Okay, because when they're killed, unhumanely, I can't really justify killing, right. But when they are, then you're ingesting those chemicals in your body, which stress you out, which are bad for you.
Fear chemicals. We talked last week about how emotions actually can create stress chemicals in your body, right? And so animals are no different. Okay? So it's a very, very real thing. So that's all. Conscious. Be conscious about that. Okay? And I'm going to leave that for now. What else? When you do this, when you eat consciously, this reduces your omega-6 fats, which we'll talk about in a second. Reduces the amount of toxins you get into your body. And the antibiotic load, because half of the world's antibiotics are used where? Half of the antibiotics used in the world are for raising animals. Okay? Because if they didn't give antibiotics to these animals, they would all be, you know, they all get sick. So they have to keep them all on antibiotics all the time. They put it in the feed. So when we get those antibiotics into our body from drinking the milk of that animal or eating the flesh of that animal, then we take on that antibiotic load, and antibiotic resistance is a big issue in the world, because, you know, if you do need an antibiotic, if you get a really bad infectious disease, you know, your body's been subjected to so many different of these antibiotics that the bugs have become resistant to that. So it's a very big problem for antibiotic resistance. Avoid French fries, soft drinks, and enriched flour and bread. That's the basics, right? We all know if we just got rid of soft drinks and French fries and white bread, we'd all be better off, okay? So just make some conscious decisions about those three things, and you can make a big, big impact. The other thing we have to focus on is low glycemic index foods. Why? Because when we eat sweet things, our blood sugar goes up, right? Right? We eat a piece of white bread with no fiber or protein, you know, diminished amounts of protein, no fiber. That goes right through our blood sugar goes right through the roof. Or it's a cookie, or it's a Twix or Snickers or whatever they are. Twickers. Maybe they should make a Twickers bar. High blood sugar, and then that makes your insulin go up. Okay? This is a good thing, because insulin's supposed to put our blood supposed to put sugar into our cells so our body can use it for energy. Problem is we do this so much that our insulin levels start getting higher and higher and higher and higher. And just like the inflammation can get out of control, insulin can get out of control. When insulin gets out of control, then you've got major problems, because insulin's job is to store. So you store, store, and your body gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you start having cardiovascular disease, your blood clots more easily, all these things happen with insulin resistance. So what happens is, the first incidence of this, if you get like hypoglycemia, like, oh my gosh, I gotta have sugar now, that's a big problem for a lot of people, but that's the first sign of insulin resistance. So if you have those dramatic needs for sugar fast, that usually means you're heading towards an insulin resistant pathway or pattern. Yeah.
So then if that happens, should you eat like a natural sugar, like syrup?
Ideally, absolutely. A natural sugar to bring you back up. Okay? And ideally, we don't want to get to that place to begin with. So it's a big sign to start looking at lower glycemic index foods, which I'll have a list of them here first in a second. But we know what they are. It's the things that aren't like super duper sweet, right? This is our salads and our more like berries instead of grapes. You know, you just know that when you eat something, oh wow, that's a rush. Versus a berry, a blackberry is not going to be as big of a rush as a raisin or a grape or something like that. You see what I mean? So you just know kind of intuitively. A grapefruit's not as sweet as a banana. Okay? So think citrus and berries and things like that in the fruit category. Okay? So whenever this, we get low blood sugar and our increased fat storage, this increases our hunger and this makes us crave more high glycemic index food. We retake the high glycemic index foods into our system, high blood sugar, and then we're in a loop. Remember that loop we talked about last week, getting in a loop with your thoughts? You can get in a loop with your sugar balance as well and sugar craving. So we have to break that loop. So what makes a low glycemic index food? Number one, fats, you know, because this, how fast does the sugar go up into your bloodstream? That's what glycemic index is. How fast does it go up? And the number one thing, or not the number one thing, one of the things is fat. Fat slows the spike. So when you're eating a meal, if you just eat only sweet things, you know, if you have a meal where you have a bowl of pasta and a piece of French bread and some tomato sauce on top of it, there's not a whole lot of fat there. Okay? So you're going to spike really quickly. Okay? As opposed to if you had a smaller bowl of whole grain pasta, right? And you had a salad beside it with a few avocados on it. Now when you eat that whole meal, the total glycemic load is going to be a lot less. So you're not going to go through the roof. It's not going to be like a bottle rocket where you shoot it up and you go plummeting back down. And then, you know, 30 minutes after you eat, you're looking around for something to eat again. Anybody ever have that experience? Usually happens around Thanksgiving. You eat till you're stuffed. And then 30 minutes later, you're nibbling on another piece of pumpkin pie out of the cabinet. You know what I mean? So fat is a big one. You want to make sure it's good fat. And I'm always using plant-based fats here just because that's what I believe. Avocado, extra virgin coconut oil is a very good fat to use. Extra virgin olive oil for your salads. Flax meal is a very good fat. Hemp seed is also a good fat. Walnuts, almonds, nuts and seeds, these things can be very good fats that slow down your sugar spikes. Fiber is the other one. We want to strive to get at least 4 grams a serving and 35 grams a day. And this also slows this bloodstream and gives you a more even burn. Right? Fiber, my favorite supplements of fiber are, number one is flaxseed. Okay, ground up some flaxseed. Put it either on your salads or make a smoothie with flaxseed in it. This is a great way to get, and it's got a lot of other good nutrients in it as well. That's good for detoxification and hormone balance and all that kind of good stuff. And don't forget sprouts. You know, sprouts, actually just this past Tuesday, we had a raw food meetup. We have it once a month. You guys are all welcome, by the way. Every third Tuesday of the month from 6 to 8 o'clock, we have a raw food meetup. It's a plant-based raw food meetup, and we meet in Jeffersonville.
Potluck.
Yeah, so you bring it. So it's cool to see what people come up with, and you realize that, hey, well, I could eat like this. I wouldn't, you know, there is ways to eat without feeling deprived, right? Okay, so fiber. We get more fiber. And what I was saying is this past Tuesday, we did a sprouting demonstration. We talked about the benefits of sprouting, how to do it, and all that kind of stuff. And that's what this stuff is up here. One is broccoli sprout, one is mung bean sprout, and one is a mix of different things like alfalfa and red clover seeds and things like that.
And it's kind of
Yeah, it's like
it's kind of fun to see something growing in your kitchen, and you just reach in the jar once in a while and take out a handful, and we'll mix it in with some avocados and a little bit of olive oil and balsamic vinegar or whatever, and make a little salad out of sprouts, and you're completely satisfied.
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
It's okay.
Protein is the other factor here. Good amounts of the protein and amino acids stimulates glucagon, which is the pancreatic hormone that tells the body to release stored energy rather than to store it. It's like insulin tells you to store, glucagon tells you to mobilize the energy, and so you can use it for your body. So protein is the other thing here, right? We already talked about how to get, you know, besides animal protein, you can also get protein from kale, and like you put a pile of kale or broccoli and a pile of hamburger, same protein content. It's just the pile of kale is going to be a little bit bigger, because 4 ounces of hamburger versus 4 ounces of kale, you know, the pile over here is going to be a lot bigger, right? So you have to just eat more of it. And we do that through smoothies and juicing and things like that. Yes?
Are those like really nasty and stuff? Like, is it like an acquired taste?
No.
They smell and taste really good.
You guys are welcome to...
We'll get a fork later and maybe... About
yeah, I don't think that the broccoli seeds aren't quite ready, but the mung beans are definitely ready, and the zesty mix is close to ready. So you guys are free to try some of those. Okay, so we want to increase the fat, fiber, and protein content to make it more of a meal rather than just a big sugar spike. That's the whole deal here. We just would, you know, if we just eat a bagel. And whoosh, we go fire up and we fire right back down, and then we're looking for something else an hour later. Here's the next big issue. Fats and oils. Okay? Your fat balance is one of the most important things you can possibly pay attention to. When I say fat balance, what I'm talking about is omega-6s and omega-3s. Anybody ever heard of like fish oil is good for you and omega-3s are good for you? Okay. Omega-3s are very anti-inflammatory. The EPA DHA is what your DHA in these fish oil, or it doesn't have to be in fish oil. Your body can make that as well. And I'll show you how, but your body can make that stuff. But your omega-6s come from grain and things that eat grain. And your omega-3s come from green and things that eat green. That's the way to think about it. Sixes are grain, threes are green. Okay. Originally, like prehistorically, we were like a 1-to-1 ratio, omega-6 to omega-3. This is a good balance. And then once early 1900s hit, and we started, you know, mass agriculture started going on, and we started feeding society with grain, then we started getting kicked up to more omega-6s and less omega-3s. And now, depending on what research and literature you look at, we're anywhere from 20-to-45-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. This is a extremely inflammatory ratio, and this is why we have all degenerative diseases. This is the reason for allergies. This is the reason for asthma. This is the reason for cardiovascular disease. You know, cardiovascular disease is not about cholesterol? What? Cholesterol is actually a good for you chemical in your body. It's only bad if it gets oxidized by inflammation. Okay? And when you have lots of omega-6s, you have lots of inflammation. It's like, and the cholesterol is just like the trees in the forest. Right? They're not bad, but it's the oxidation, it's the fire that rages through the forest that causes the problems. So the idea is we want to make sure that the fire is low. Controlled burn. Remember? We keep our body in a controlled burn so we don't oxidize our cholesterol. When you oxidize the cholesterol with fire, with inflammation, you get plaquing and all that nasty stuff that builds up in your artery. People have to have triple bypasses and all that kind of stuff. So, here's what I talked about earlier, and you'll see why fatty acids goes right into this. But this is Bruce Lipton. He wrote the book, The Biology of Belief. And he's the one who basically brought it to the forefront that the primacy of the DNA is dead. It's not about your DNA, it's about your environment. Okay? And where that term, the environment stupid, came from President Clinton's first presidential campaign, when his campaign manager said, "Hey, it's all about the economy, stupid. You got to get the economy going." And that, so that came like a, became a big phrase back in that time. It's the economy, stupid. Well, Bruce said, "It's the environment, stupid." Because he looked at, he studied, he was a molecular biologist. He cloned cells for a living. That's what he did. He didn't have any, he was totally entrenched in the medical model. And he watched, whenever he put cells in a petri dish and he put nutrients in that petri dish, he would see the cells actually gravitate toward and use these nutrients to evolve and expand. When he put something that was toxic in the dish, he saw the cells move away from it, and the cells died and suffered. So, same gene he's trying to clone, or same stem cell that he's trying to manipulate, and that stem cell just depended on the environment that was in the petri dish. So we are in a big petri dish here, guys. Essentially what we're in a big petri dish, and it depends on the environment in our petri dish that determines whether we succeed or fail at being healthy. That's the bottom line. His other big contribution was the fact that he went into DNA, in cellular DNA. He went into a cell. He went in and basically took the DNA out of the cell. What's that? Oh, is it?
Audio now.
Is that
right?
Down to this. We can keep this guy out. Alright, so he took the DNA out of the cell, and what to his surprise did he find? He found that the cell lived on, even though the DNA was gone. How's that possible? Like, the DNA is like the most important thing, right? So he took the DNA out of the cell. The cell lives on. And in some cases, for several weeks to a month after the DNA was gone. How is that possible? It's because all the DNA does is make proteins for you. The most important thing in your cell, when he punctured the cell membrane, the thing around the outside of the cell died immediately. Because the membrane around the cell is the brain of the cell. It tells the DNA what to do. Your cell membrane is the most important thing because it serves as the brain of your cell. So it's pretty important to build good brains for your 100 trillion cells in your body.
Yes, how did you take the DNA out of the cell?
A micropipette type thing, really small, it kind of enucleated, he kind of basically sucked it out.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing, but the biology of belief it's got this whole process in there and everything they did. Just check that book out. It's a good one too. It's a good mind bender, good shifter of consciousness. But when he did that, like I said, so it's all about the membrane on the outside. So we got to build a healthy membrane, because the membrane of our cells is what interprets the environment going on in our body. And this is what it looks like. You have this nice fluid. It's got all these things in it, but it's mostly, it's made of fat. And that's why it's important to build a good membrane with good fat. Right? Those omega-3 fatty acids makes the membrane nice and fluid, and it helps one cell communicate with the next cell. So it's really, really important, because if you don't have a good cell membrane, then your cells can't talk to each other. And if all of your cells are trying to get together and make a healthy human, you think it's important that they can actually communicate with each other? Because all we are, all our body is a community of cells. So if there's a community that's working towards a common goal, do you think that they're going to reach that goal if they don't communicate with each other? It's all about communication, cell-to-cell communication. And that's why we have to build a healthy membrane. And then this is going to come to a shock to you, I know. But we build these healthy cells with good fats, EPA and DHA, and building the framework of the cells, which has lots of vitamin C and potent antioxidants. Color is what builds your cell membranes and helps things talk to each other. Without having color in your cells, without having good fat in your cells are just kind of on their own. Right? They can't get help from the others. So we have bad cells. Bad cellular communication. This is the process. I told you before that omega-6s are all coming from grain, and they eventually end up as inflammation, which causes increased clotting, increased muscle spasm, allergies, mind agitation, all of these things. And this all happens with omega-6s. Omega-3s come from predominantly green, and they give you the anti-inflammatory benefits. Okay, so this is the difference, right? If we feed lots of grain to an animal in a factory farm, we get an inflammation bomb as a result as the end product. If these animals are fed grass and green throughout their whole life, and at the end you get a less inflammatory, more balanced animal product. And this is for the people who want to continue to consume that. I think what happens a lot of times is you go through stages. And once you learn certain things about animal production and things like that, you start going from, okay, well, maybe I should quit eating so much McDonald's every day and just pay a little more attention, eat a little bit less of that, and eat more beans and stuff like that, right? And then you go to the next level. And you think, well, I'm not going to eat any animal products at all unless I know the source and I know where they came from. And then eventually, you may get to the point where you just choose to not have any animal products at all. And wherever you are is cool, right? But it's just a matter of doing what works for you. Yes?
I'm wondering your stance on dairy products. I'm a vegetarian my whole life. Mm-hmm. And my mom's a vegan. She doesn't do dairy products. And she's very healthy. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I need dairy products. Like I need my milk, my cheese, and that kind of stuff. So do you think it's good for your body, or?
It's possible your body can tolerate it and not do tremendous amounts of harm, let's put it that way. Is it actually good for you? Is it designed for you?
Yeah.
Not really, when you look at, you know, what's the ideal, you know, milk for a, you know, what is milk designed for? It's designed for a baby cow.
Right.
That's the kind of the thing you go with. But some people can handle dairy much better than others. Okay, but eventually, I think that eventually you may want to go past that.
Right.
Okay, there's a lot of milk problems, especially if it's homogenized or pasteurized.
Okay. I drink organic, but I mean. Order pizza, you know.
Right. Oh, I get it. So, it's going through the stages. But ultimately, no, it's not an extremely healthy food. It can be healthier if it's raw, if it's not been homogenized and pasteurized and gone through all the processes. Then it's a health. See, it's that thing again. It's like any old cheese versus I want to know where my milk came from that made the cheese. Two, I want to make sure that it's raw cheese, and then maybe no cheese. Okay, so it's going through that evolution. So, but you know, you don't have to have cheese to survive as a human. Right?
Yeah, I feel like I need certain dairy products. Though. Like I'm not as, I don't know, powered with them. Like I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah.
I feel more with it.
Right, it's more satiating, it's got more saturated fat, it's more filling.
Yeah.
And that may be how you continue to do it. You know, but it depends on how you know, just keep listening to your body and maybe try some different things as you go along.
Of course,
and
avocados
are avocados are a big piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, cheese.
Okay. All right.
And sprouts.
Yeah.
I mean, I eat a lot of that, you know, with a vegan.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly eating really healthy, but I just have
right.
ice cream too, you know.
Right. Well, just definitely as conscious as possible and as raw as possible. And you can get raw milk. I mean, in certain health food stores and things, you can buy it straight from the farmer.
I should get a cow.
You can make your own. Yeah, get a cow. All right.
You know what? I want to say one thing about that. It is, if you have a food in your life that you feel like you can't live without, it might be just an interesting test to, you know, write down how you feel when, you know, throughout your day and after you eat it and such. and then do without it for a period of time and see how you feel during those days. It might be an interesting assessment.
Yeah, elimination and provocation. Get rid of it for a couple of weeks, put it back in, and just pay attention, journal about what your body feels like in the process. You know. So, bottom line here, guys, is eat a ton more green and a lot less grain. That's the other big take-home for today, right? I mean, it doesn't get any more simple than that. So, I've been talking about all these things. Where do they come from? Grains, vegetable oils, soybean oil, cottonseed oil, corn, canola oil, a lot of things like that. Anything that eats grains, right? So, factory farm animal products, they're very inflammatory. They screw up the communication of your cells. And when you screw up the communication and the cell membrane, then your insulin doesn't work good, your estrogen doesn't work good, your thyroid gets screwed up, your testosterone doesn't work like it's supposed to. All of these things get messed up if the brain can't, if one cell can't talk to another cell. Okay, if these hormones come in and they come in and try and dock on the cell membrane, and the cell membrane is like all clogged up with bad fat and stuff, and it doesn't have very good, you know, it's just all inflamed from all of the oxidative inflammation that's in your body, and it just can't get the message through to the DNA. So the message gets garbled and you get a bad output. Omega-3s, green food, grasses, green food, algae, dark green leafy vegetables, flax, walnuts, hemp seed, chia seed, cold water fish, okay? And you want to make sure it's, again, not a factory farmed fish. Why? Fish farms are fed what? Amazingly, they're fed grain and antibiotics, right? And they're all crowded together, so they have to give them antibiotics or they'd all get sick. So making sure that if you do choose to eat fish, you want to, again, you go up the ladder of conscious evolution as far as what you eat, especially, and it goes to fish as well. These are very anti-inflammatories, like I said, improve the cell-to-cell communication, better health. And also, there's been a lot of research done with the insulin problems. People who have insulin resistance and have been going through this up and down sugar spike thing for a long time, when they just use a fish oil by itself, it automatically improves insulin sensitivity. Why? Because now the cell membrane can hear the message more clearly. That's what it all comes down to. Right? Here's the other kicker, right? DHA, that EPA DHA, the DHA part of the fish oil, it's a very essential brain fat. It's what your brain's made of. It's like the structural architecture of your brain is DHA. What if you're not getting any of that in your diet? Do you think you can actually think? This is ADHD, guys. Just getting in omega-3s into your diet in copious amounts does amazing things for your ability to focus, concentrate, learn, stay on task, all that fun stuff. DHA is a big piece of the puzzle. And the other big thing about it is it's radiator fluid for your brain. I'm not going to go through all the things I need to get moving along here. Radiator fluid for your brain. See, your brain runs really hot. Most of the oxygen and fuel goes to your brain because the brain is the hottest organ in your body, right? That's also why we have so much neurodegenerative disease, because we have all this, you know, our brain runs so hot. DHA is like radiator fluid or coolant for your brain. It's a good way to think about it. Now, arachidonic acid, that's that stuff that if you ate too much omega-6s, it eventually turns into arachidonic acid. Okay? So it happens in your body. It also happens, that's what you get when you're getting a factory farm animal product. You're getting lots of arachidonic acid. And when you get too much arachidonic acid, it stimulates, among other things, stimulates your brain to secrete cortisol. So just by having too much bad fat in your diet, your brain is stressed. Your body gets the message of stress. So you can induce stress on your body by the food you consume. Okay, it does a lot. I actually took these from a neurotransmitter seminar that I did, so I also talked about some other neurotransmitters. But basically, it doesn't allow your brain to feel good, peaceful, and easy. It's agitated. Arachidonic acid agitates your mind. makes the synapses burn too hot. So it's like excitatory and it's really, but is it bad to have an excitatory brain at certain times? It has to be excited for you to be able to learn and remember stuff. You have to have excitation. But again, when you go over the top and the fire burns rampant in the forest and it's not kept in check, then it gets out of control. So DHA deficiency, learning disabilities, reduced visual acuity and tracking in kids, like autistic, you know, behavior and things like that. It reduces your ability to track appropriately, increases your aggressive behavior, and also increases your risk of depressive disorders. So omega-3 fats for your brain, guys. You got to get them in. Okay, you have to get them in there. I still recommend, even though I don't recommend eating tons and tons of animal products, I still recommend omega-3 fish oil as a supplement. It's still where I am right now because it's just so powerful at filling the void of deficiency that has been going on for so long in your body. Okay. Remember, DHA cools it off. Arachidonic acid fires it up. So we want to cool off the brain. That's what it's all about. I'm going to see if this is going to work for you. Has anyone seen the Matrix?
Yes.
How many? Can I see? Oh, wow. You guys watch it in class, or you just all watch it on your own and pass it around? It's only about 3 minutes.
You said the Matrix.
I'm sorry. Yes.
So it's called Matrix. You've seen the Matrix.
I thought
you
said Matrix.
Leo, who are you? And how did you know my name? I am Mufius, and I know a lot about you. Have you heard of the Matrix?
The Matrix?
Do you want to know what it is?
Okay.
The Matrix is all around you. It is the story we tell ourselves about where meat and animal products come from. This family farm is a fantasy. Take the blue pill and stay here in the fantasy. Take the red pill and I'll show you the truth. Sustainable family farming to maximize their profits at great cost to both humans and animals. Factory farming was born. Animals are packed as closely together as possible. Most never see sunlight, touch ground, or get fresh air. Many can't even turn around. These cruel conditions cause fights and disease amongst the animals. To fix this, the corporate machine began systematic mutilations, practices such as debeating chickens, and they started adding a constant dosage of antibiotics to their feed just to keep these poor wretches alive. This overuse of antibiotics breeds super strains of resistant disease-causing germs. Every day we get closer to that.
What's that smell?
Well, tell you doctor, expert. This pollutes the air and the water. That's why communities and factory farms often suffer from high levels of related sicknesses.
Well, it smells like shh.
And what do you want? Factory farm corporations have been destroying communities and mistreating their workers for decades. Since 1950, over 2 million small hog farms have disappeared. If they continue at this rate, there will be no real independent family farms left. That is the Matrix here. The lie we tell ourselves about where our food comes from. But it's not too late. There is a resistance.
That's one of the yeah. There's a part two and a part three, and matrix.com. But you know, that's the fluffy rosy picture. I mean, you all have probably seen the more PETA type videos and things like that. And you know, even the middle ground, even movies like Food Inc. that came out a couple years ago, they kind of give you the middle ground of that. So it's an important thing to know, understand, and embody, so you can make conscious decisions. Because every time that you do have the McDonald's hamburger, you're voting yes, I approve of that. Excuse me. And KFC, so you know, and so you're going to have battles in your mind with that. You're going to get mad, right? I know. At first, sometimes I would just shut down my conscience, tell it to shut up, because I just wanted to eat what I wanted to eat, right? But it comes to the point where you just can't do it anymore, and that's what I came to that realization. It's just your consciousness just raises so high that you just can't do it anymore. And again, it's an evolutionary process. But hopefully, sometimes it's very good to watch some of the actual footage from factory farms and see what really happens in there. So, but we're not going to go there today. Okay, so we're going to try and finish this up here, because I know there is some. Questions I want to get to. Of course, we're not going to get to everybody's, but I'm going to give you a little bit of this scenario. We talked about, now we're going up the ladder even more, right? We started out with starting to eat less sugary foods and all these grains and factory farm animal products. And then we're going to eat more nutrient-dense food and vegetables and colorful food. And now I'm telling you, well, let's not cook so much of it either. Okay? So why do we have to focus on not cooking so much? Because when we cook food, and especially plant food, when we cook plant food, we destroy the antioxidants. All of them, no. Most of them, at least half of them, yes. So when you go through the cooking process, you eliminate or you damage a good portion of antioxidants in your food. So you just cut your antioxidant ability in half when you put it under the fire. Okay? So that's one big reason. Because we don't want to turn into the rotten apple. We want to keep our apple as fresh and alive as possible. More energy. Here's the process. The sun gives the energy to the plant. Or the plant takes the photonic energy from the sun. And that leaf of spinach there, which is actually it's in my garden a couple years ago, the energy is coming from the sun into the plant. It's because, you know, we can absorb that energy from the sun by getting it, right? By just going out and absorbing the sunshine and absorbing that energy. It always feels good to have sunshine on your body, doesn't it? It's energy. You're getting that photonic energy. Those electrons are going into your body. But also, they're going into the plant. But we can take the sun's energy and package it in the plant. It's a massive transfer going on there. And that energy in the plant is packaged by magnesium is the main element here. Okay? Whenever magnesium in the plant, it helps the photonic energy from the sun get turned into electrical energy in the plant. Magnesium is the key ion. Right? That's the one. The magnesium is the magic mineral there. And then we give that energy, we eat that plant, and then we give that energy to our mitochondria in our cell. Our mitochondria is what helps us take those electrons and turn it into actual energy that we can use in our body. And this is what we use for doing whatever we want to do. Cartwheels on the beach, if that's your thing. Maybe it's wanting to run faster, jump higher. Maybe it's wanting to think more clearly. Maybe it's just wanting to get rid of some kind of an allergy or crazy depression that you've got, or whatever it is. Okay, we have to. But if we destroy this energy by throwing this food in the fire, then we don't have as much energy on the other end. It's a pretty simple thing. It's energy conservation. Right? We talk about energy conservation all the time. We need to conserve energy. We need to turn the lights off. We need to
do all the stuff with you know, energy as we think about it as far as the energy we use to light the light. But we also need to conserve the energy that we that the plants have made for us. Right? When we cook them, we lose that. The other thing is, these plants have lots of electrical potential. Right? We take that energy from the sun, we package up into these electrons that we give to our body. Right? And we can also get that same voltage, that we can also get electrical potential by taking your shoes off and putting your feet on the ground. That's also another way to get those negative electrons into your body. It's called grounding, earthing. Put your feet on the ground. That's, you know, when you put you know, a half inch of synthetic material between you and the earth, you're not getting those electrons from the earth. And those electrons act as antioxidants for your body. Pretty cool. But same thing, you get these electrons through alkaline foods. I mean, the alkaline foods, basically, when you think of alkaline foods, you think of green food. That's the main thing. You've heard of alkalis? Alkalis. Alkalis with green food. Comes back down to it. This is what's called Curlian photography. It looks at the subtle energy of foods, or subtle energy of anything. You can actually measure it. And on the left, you see an organic mushroom. You can really see that the electrical potential coming off of that mushroom versus a commercially grown mushroom, which doesn't have as much vibrance and nutrient capacity, and so it has less energy. So there's your reason, okay, why should they eat organic? Because more minerals, more love, more care goes into the plant, more energy. Right? So, but whenever you cook something, the lights go off on this photograph because there's no... You've destroyed the electrical potential of the plant. Still has some antioxidants in it, but you've destroyed the electrical potential. So, very important to keep electrical potential. The other thing about cooked food is if you eat only cooked food, a big plate of cooked food, this guy found out in 1930, Paul Kutchkov found out that you could take a body and measure the white blood cell count, your immune cell. Your white blood cell count goes up after you eat cooked food. Your body has a reaction to it and it senses it needs to raise the white blood cell count because it's fighting something. Isn't that interesting? I think it's very, very interesting. And then it's a well-known phenomenon called digestive leukocytosis. You eat a big cooked food meal, your body thinks, oh my gosh, what's going on here? Something's invading. Okay, but they found out that if you tip the scales, if over half of your meal is raw, then you can avoid the digestive leukocytosis. So it's like the magic number is like 51% of the total calories in your meal. So always just keep that in mind. That's a good place to start, right? Always have at least half of it raw, and preferably just more than half. They found that this eating of unaltered raw food or food heated at low temperatures did not cause that reaction in the blood. And it was especially, if this food had been heated beyond a certain temperature, which was unique to each food, or the food was processed, it was refined, and there was chemicals added to it. If it was processed in its production, the number of white cells increased. So the more processing it has, the worse it gets. And the worst offenders of all, whether heated or not, were the processed foods that had been refined. Like I said, the white flour, the white rice, or something that's been homogenized. Milk, right, has been homogenized. Pasteurized, preserved with chemicals. These are the things that cause most of the digestive leukocytosis to occur. The other big thing about raw food is the enzymes it still has in it. Food enzymes, okay? If you're eating all cooked food, you destroy the enzymes. As soon as you go up above 118 degrees, you destroy all the enzymes in the plant. Okay, you destroy all that electrical negative potential that you could have had, and also it takes more of your enzymes to digest that food now, because normally plants have their own enzymes, and then when you eat them, it helps them digest in your body, so it doesn't place as much digestive burden on your body, right? So if you have the enzymes still in the food, then you can preserve your enzymes. You don't have to waste all that energy making enzymes. You guys ever have the sense of eating a big cooked food meal and you just had to sit down and just kind of wore you out after you got done eating? know, eat a big meal of cooked food versus if you ate, ate a pear and a salad. How do you feel after that? Do you feel like you need to sit back and unbutton your top button and veg out on the couch after you have a piece of fruit and a salad? I'm sorry, I guess that's a guy thing. I don't know.
No, it's accurate.
Oh, you do it. But you see what I mean? You're lighter. When you eat more raw, you just feel lighter and more energized all the time. So it's a good thing to experiment with. Cooking destroys 100% of those enzymes. All right. So that's all I wanted to talk. And what I'll do is I'll PDF these slides and send them to you, Kyle, so everybody can.
And at least we should have audio today.
Yeah, we should have something if I can splice and dice. The other cool thing about raw food is you have less hunger. You would think just the opposite, but why? Because when you eat a bunch of cooked foods, you get a bunch of calories, but you know what? Your cells are like, hey man, I got all these calories, but I didn't get any nutrients, dude. I need some nutrients. Right? So your brain thinks, well, I better go get some more food because these cells are malnutrition. They're getting all these calories, but they're not getting the nutrients because this food is not nutrient dense because I've cooked it. So your cells are still hungry, even though you've got all these calories, so you keep feeding your body more calories until your body is satiated with nutrients. So it's kind of like it's a form of malnutrition if you only eat cooked food all the time. But there it is. So you're always hungry. You're always hungry for more if your cells don't get what they need. And when you eat less calorie and you have more nutrient density, this has been studied, geez, in every animal species known to man. When you restrict calories, you increase longevity. Bottom line. You can double the lifespan of a lot of the animal studies, you can double the lifespan of the animal just by restricting its calories. But you have to maintain nutrient density.
But to clarify, you can eat a lot of food and still calories.
You can eat a lot of nutrient-dense food because it's not a lot of calories, right? You're not getting the heavy dose of calories in the big fatty meat if you're eating more nutrient-dense plant foods, you can eat more, feel fulfilled, and still have all kinds of energy and not feel like you need to eat all the time. Right? I can't remember the resource now, I got it all cut off. But it's kind of, as you cook some of these foods, vitamin A is cut in half, your carotenes are cut in half, beta carotene is 25%. Cooked and drained, your vitamin C, 75% of your vitamin C is destroyed. Your B vitamin thiamine, 70% is destroyed. So you see that at least on average, half of all your nutrients are gone whenever you cook. So just by cooking, you're going to get more nutrient density. You're going to have more energy. And we already talked about this stuff. Cooked food uses more energy to digest. Lots of green food makes your batteries better, better, better. We talked about that. Okay. So the raw food thing is one of those next evolution, those next steps to think about. Okay. But in general, a good starting point there is just, hey, let's just make sure that, you know, most of my plate is full of raw plant food, and then if I'm going to choose to eat animal protein or some cooked food, it's over here on a quarter of the plate, not mounding over the whole thing. And then I have a little side salad in a dish that's that big. Okay, you get the point? You need to shift thinking about that. All right. So, I saw you had a hand early on, and I didn't get you. Sorry about that.
I did want to know that, but I
wanted to
because I got that
though.
Okay. Mung bean.
Yes.
Oh, mung bean. Yeah.
And actually, I'm just getting ready to say, if you could get a spoon, I could go around and just put a spoonful in each person's hand and try
the mung beans.
But I don't know how to go.
I can just. I can eat someone if someone.
I just. The pantry's open. Is it?
You know what? If someone just gets a couple of paper towels, you can just go by and do that too. I mean, nobody's opposed to that. All right, so I've got some. You know, I got a lot. You know, this is going to be. I don't want to turn this into a marathon.
Okay.
So there's a question about omega-3 fatty acids. Why are they important? So we covered that one, thank goodness. How does coffee affect my sleep?
Negatively.
Okay. Coffee it increases your stress levels. You know, that's basically what it is. It's kind of a nutritionally induced stress. It does have some nutrient value, right? Antioxidants, you hear about that process. But the bottom line is, especially if you're drinking it, if you can handle it, and if your liver's in good shape and you can metabolize it effectively, you can probably get away with drinking a cup or two of coffee a day, okay? But some people, we have different abilities to get rid of stuff. So sometimes if you drink coffee in the morning, you may be still you didn't get rid of that coffee and it still be circulating in your blood 10 o'clock that night. And especially, you don't want to be drinking it in the afternoon or evening time, because it will definitely affect your sleep. Just that's what caffeine is designed to do, is to keep you alert, right? So, cutting it out completely, or at least just maybe one or two cups in the morning at the most. How many calories should an average teenager have a day? How many, they say diet soft drinks aren't good for you even though they're a diet. The average teenager calories, it's dependent. What's an average teenager, right? It depends on your body composition, your height, weight, and all that kind of stuff. So, you're looking at, me right here, I need at least 2,000 calories a day to keep even pace. So there's teenagers my size, right? So the same metabolism, they need 2,000 calories.
2,000?
Something like that.
I think I eat 100,000 or something, because I'm trying to think.
It's impossible.
Okay, I eat a whole lot.
Right. Well, my point here is everybody's metabolism is different. So there is, I can't answer that and tell you your teenagers need 1,600 calories because you're a teenager, right?
Mine's really fast, so what would you?
Yeah, so whatever allows you to maintain the body composition you desire.
Right.
Okay? So that's because I can't answer it any other way than that, okay? Because it's a trick question, because it's dependent on your metabolism. Soft drinks, diet soft drinks, they say aren't good for you even though they're diet. That's a very good question, because, excuse me?
Aspartame and sucralose?
Yep. You've got a couple of different situations here. You've got the artificial sweetener situation, which is a brain toxin. Okay, remember me talking about your brain running hot and getting too excited, and that's not good for your brain to be hyper-excitable? Okay. If your brain's too hyper-excitable, these chemicals make your brain go hyper-excitable. That's what they do. What do you think of those mung beans, guys? They're kind of sweet, aren't they? If you need to spit them out, no. So everybody's got it.
That's not bad. One out of two.
You had to spit them out.
And that's fine.
I think they're an important.
Well, yeah. Sure. All sprouts in general.
You don't have to eat them by themselves.
No.
Yeah. I mean, over a salad, sometimes I'll cut up an apple.
Or they're good on a
Mix them in with an apple with a little apple cider vinegar or something like that.
Yeah, avocado.
What's that?
Like what?
Like grass. Like grass. Yeah. That's a good point. You can't, if you don't spray your yard and stuff, you should be able to go out and eat just about everything in your yard.
What about
the dandelions? Dandelions and
you
know, I'm sorry.
We can eat dandelions.
How do you feel about soy? Because, like, I know, I've heard, like, good and bad things where, like, pure soy is okay, like, soy beans and stuff like that, but then I've heard, like, unless it's processed and, like, tofu.
Right. Hey, guys, this is a really good and important question, and it's about soy. And, they're all right. They might have a few hard pieces.
Be careful with these.
Some of the seeds didn't germinate. I didn't take all the non-germinated stuff. Okay. The non-germinated seeds aren't filtered out of them, so there may be a couple of hard seeds that didn't germinate. Soy can be Zesty sprouting mix, yeah. Alfalfa and red clover and I think radish and things like that. Soy is a very loaded topic because it's got redeeming qualities and it's also eaten too much can affect thyroid function and hormone level. So the thing with soy is the best way to eat soy is fermented. Well, not tofu, is that fermented? When you tempeh miso are true fermented soy product.
What about tofu? Is it
tofu is not. It is not. It's not fermented. Okay, so it's not fermented. No, it's just it's processed, but it's not fermented.
Yes. Right, so that's like because I'm a vegetarian, so that's like the hardest thing for me to eliminate because a lot of people have told me, you know, like no tofu is not actually good, like especially just in studies. And so I'm like, I love tofu.
Moderation. Moderation, not the where you get in trouble with soy is if you quit eating meat and you go all to soy, you end up eating a lot of soy.
Yeah, I don't like this
grass, right? So it's getting too much is what gets you in trouble with soy.
Right. And I know men can't assimilate it as well, right? And it's not as healthy for them. Isn't that right?
I don't know about the assimilation factor. But it can be healthy for men and women. But I'm just saying you have to keep it in moderation. It's not like it's this taboo thing.
Right.
Right? It's not like it's a taboo thing. It's just going at it smart and not eating it in abundance every day, rotating foods around. Okay? The other thing about the diet sodas is we talked about insulin earlier, and whenever you drink something sweet or you eat something sweet, your blood sugar goes up, and that makes your insulin go up. Well, the thing about diet sodas is even though there's no sugar in them, whenever you drink it, your brain perceives, wow, man, this is sweet. And when it perceives that sweetness, it still makes your insulin go up. So you don't avoid the insulin problems when you drink diet. You avoid the sugar problems, because sugar has its own set of problems, but you don't avoid the insulin problems. Actually, they found that it's actually worse, because it screws up the cell-to-cell communication, and it can actually have more insulin impact. So, that's a good question. And I know that, I hate to not cover all these, but we just can't go through.
Maybe we can shoot an email.
All of them. And what I said to Kyle is, this is the stuff that I like to hear because it tells me what people want to know. So I will use this to guide some future content on my site because I do a lot of blog posts and podcasts and videos and things like that. And I will use these. Maybe I'll do a...
A lot of them were answered.
Oh, were they?
As I glanced through them.
Well, the ones that weren't answered, I may just go through and do a little... podcast answering them, and I'll probably publish it on my blog, and then what you guys can gettoyourcore.com is the blog, and so this would be helpful for me because I'm always looking for good content to publish. Yeah, somebody said
Yeah, go to me again. Sorry. Okay. I missed the positive thinking. Mm-hmm. And also, I was in the beginning, so I was wondering if you talked about stress and foods that reduce stress.
I don't think specifically that I talked about stress foods. The biggest thing with stress is it depletes your body of B vitamins. So that's B vitamins. Yes. When stress is on board, your body is in fight or flight mode. Okay, so it burns sugar for fuel rather than fat. That's the main thing. And when you burn up sugar, it takes a lot of B vitamins to process and burn sugar. So you usually become, if you're chronically stressed, you're usually going to become B vitamin depleted. The other big nutrient for your adrenal glands, the stress handling glands, is vitamin C. Vitamin C and B vitamins is like your main covering point for your adrenal glands and stress. But generally, what causes the main stress in our bodies, the biggest stress in our bodies, is blood sugar swings. Is bottoming out, going up high, and then falling low. That is a stress, major stress for your body.
That's usually the main
stress. So how can you support your body nutritionally if you're under stress? B vitamins and vitamin C is like the main thing. And you know, if you're not taking a multivitamin, you know, if you're just getting it off of food, that might be something that you need to cover your bases on. And just go ahead. And also looking at the fat balance. If you see the fat balance issue, you know that too much omega-6s, maybe it's too much grain or sugar that's running you high in your omega-6s. That creates a bunch of arachidonic acid, and that causes stress in your body. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it, but those are the main things I work with. Under people who are stressed out and just are depleted, I make sure they have lots of vitamin C and B vitamins as their base. Okay? All right, I'm not going to get into more of these right now. We're going to come to a close here. But if anybody else has any burning questions before we leave the nutrition aspect and go into the exercise and physical body next week, okay? I've got so I will get the PDFs of all this stuff to Kyle, and he can shoot that to you, and I'll also let him know if I do or when I do the information on the. I'm going to answer the questions on the side.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I salt everything. I really do.
I do too, but I
feel like I have